should be. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thanks very much, Mr. and Mrs. Rigby, for allowing me to come and talk to you about your days in the Savoy and your family's memories. Could you just say for the tape your name, Mr. Rigby, and your date of birth, please?
Well, it's Ronald Rigby, the 6th of the 2nd, 1931.
And Mrs. Rigby?
Mary Rigby, the 13th of the 2nd of 1933.
Excellent. I'll just swing the microphone around because I think it needs to go a little. I think it's going to have to go the other way around, I'm afraid, just to get you a little bit better. Thanks. Sorry about that. Oh yeah, that's better.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah, that's fine. Well, I believe that the Rigby family have been involved in the Savoy for many years.
True.
And I wondered, before we talk about your own experiences in that well-known hotel, could you tell us a bit about the family's history and when they first started?
Well, my grandparents first came to the island early, going back in the archives, what I can remember. Early 1900s, they started, to the best of my ability, in early 1920s, would be Mary.
In 1928, which was the Collingwood, the
Drury, top of Broadway. It's the Claymore, I think it is now, where my mother and father were married from there, and my sister and myself were born. There a few years ago, they started in the Collingwood, and in those days, from what my mother and father told me, they were the first, or one of the first, to start doing full board residence, because in those days the people used to buy the food, the eggs and bacon and things, and bring in into the Collingwood for them to cook. There was not the same facilities obviously as we've got today. And they decided after a few, well, I can't give the exact dates, but after so long, obviously just when we were born, I believe, they decided this was ridiculous, people coming in, just sleeping there, and all this hassle, putting names on eggs and on your bread and all this carry on. And they decided to do full board, and they were told by certain people and friends and family you were crazy, because only the promenade then had people that were in for bed and breakfast or full board. So this was in the early 20s, they started from doing this, full board. They eventually then moved down to my mother and father, because my grandparents were in the Manningham, which is behind the Savoy.
Is that still standing?
That's still standing. It's not, as far as I know, I believe it's for sale. They opened it, I believe, now for TT Week.
Is it still called the Manningham?
It's still called the Manningham, yes, as far as I know, yes. And then my mother and father moved into the Manningham. This was in the early 20s, when my grandparents moved into the Savoy. And then they followed in to my grandparents retired, came out of the Savoy in early 1930s, I believe. 33, 34, I think it was. Before the Second World War, and then my mother and father moved in. So it was a family, and my father's brother, Fred Rigby, but also my father's younger brother, was also involved, got married and moved into the, took the Manningham over. And so we had the Manningham, the Savoy, and also my uncle Fred had the Kenilworth. And so we had the corner places. I mean, this isn't obviously to the exact days or months, but my memory isn't as good as it should be. It's my life at the moment. But that was, of course, the start. And in those days, of course, it was the heyday of the tourist industry. As many people will tell you, it really was hard work. You worked hard, you played hard, you worked hard. And I mean, you're talking thousands, if not hundreds, thousands of people. When you think of it now, I mean, you know, 10 or 11 steamers coming in as hard as they could go during the peak weeks of the season, you know.
I'm fascinated that the family managed to get those
three places, that's
all
right.
Next to each other.
Oh, yes, right on the corner, yes.
And that must have taken quite a lot of sort of money and effort.
It did.
Were they all renting the properties?
No,
did
they bought them. They bought them. And in those days, there was not the facilities that you've got in this day and age. It was brought up with the belief that what you couldn't afford it, you did without it. In those, you know, I mean, see, that was the basis of the family, the way they did it, you know. And then other members of the family obviously came over from the mainland, of my grandparents' family, because my mother's family are all from the Isle of Manx, all born and bred here. So that's how it started. So, and then, of course, this is the last of the summer wine we had, haven't we? Actually, Mary and I, we carried on in
1961 when we got married and took over then.
So it's some of the history.
Did the family, do you know why they decided to come to the Isle of Man, your grandparents, in the first place?
What I can remember was that they decided that it was, that they, seeing the, they were business people, makes my grandparents, were, my far as I can remember, I know my grandfather, because he was my idol, was an engine driver in those days. From when I can barely remember him, and I always, my ambition was to be an engine driver when you look back on it. But they had decided, in fairness, that they saw the potential of the hotel and boarding house business as it was then. It was, you know, and that's how they decided to go into it.
Which part of England did they come from?
From my grandparents, from Warrington and St Helens. It was mainly Warrington.
Known people who'd been to the island on holiday.
Oh, yes.
So they would have had a feel.
And they used to come on holiday, I believe, beforehand, and then decided to uproot. And I mean, in those days, it was, you know, the Isle of Man was a long way away, but, you know, in distances.
To go abroad kind of thing.
No, but I suppose in their day, it was a big decision to take, you know, and the two young children to bring out to my uncle was born here, but as I say, to bring a family over and uproot. And that's how it started.
Are there any family stories that have been passed down from your grandparents or your parents about life in those days and running the businesses?
Well, only, I mean, not that I can remember a lot, John, to be quite honest. Some I know was major surgery, putting electricity in. That I remember from my grandparents and when my father took it over.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, they used to work all winter on it. It was literally a winter's work, putting in those days. And they did it themselves. I mean, obviously they had an electrician. And I believe it was Walter Hawley. I always remember the name Hawley, the electricians. They're well gone now, but I'm only as a kid then remembering this, because in those days it was gas, all gas lights, you know, gas lanterns and all this carry on. And it was a winter's work putting in, and it was an achievement to advertise that you actually had electric light in. And then in the early 30s, they put the passenger lift in, which was absolutely, I mean, oh God, it was like going to the moon. I mean, obviously in those days, because that was, there was about, from what I can remember, there was the Castle Mona, the Sefton, of course, the old established, you know, like the Fort Anne, and there was about, you could count them on one hand then, the number of passenger lifts, and to put that in. And I remember in 19, well, again, my family telling me, it cost, I think it was the whole assembly, and it came from Manchester, Etchells of Manchester, it was £350 to put the whole, that was everything, cutting the floors, you know, the whole assembly, putting the lift in.
What year would you think they might have put the lift in?
1933, I think it was, 33, 34. So it was mid-30s.
And when do you think they did the electricity?
That would be in it would be after we were divorced in 1920, and it wasn't electric in it then, so it was in the just as 1928-29, it would be just over the year when, you know, between my grandfather, I mean, I'm not to the exact year, either that 1928-29, I would think. Again, I'm only going what I've been told.
They sound like they were quite progressive business people.
They were.
From what you hear, do you think they were ahead of their time in compared to some of the other?
I do now, yes. I do. I seriously do, yes. They had
water in
hot
the
and cold,
hot
cold,
and cold
no
water.
There was no hot and cold water
in all the bedrooms.
Right.
That was another thing
that's
that
right.
They did.
That was in my grandparents. They started, because then it was just going round with the jugs, you know, the jugs of water, and then they had one bathroom in for 80 people.
When would they have put the hot and cold in?
That would be in, now 19. Again, it was all in the late 20s, early 30s that they started. I mean, this was, and then it was progress. I mean, and all paid for out of your own pocket. There was no running off to, for loans or, I mean, that's the way people, that's the way they were. So it was, they certainly had the foresight to see. I mean, it was an achievement then to actually have your own hot and cold water. And my father helped, you know, I mean, did a lot of this himself. And that's why it's probably rubbed off to me even to this day. That's why I'm probably sitting like I am now. Well, I shouldn't, don't put this on you. But I mean, again, all of us brought up to do things for yourself. To, the more you did for yourself, the more beneficial we always found.
Your grandparents
business.
Sound like really sort of lively characters. Can
they
you
were.
Remember what sort of people, what were they like?
They were, well, from what I can remember, especially with my grandmother, very outgoing. I mean, a very, very good business. Very, very keen businesswoman. She always was, more than my grandfather, from what I've been told. You know, because she decided she wanted to do extensions in the Savoy, which, when we came out, as Mary would say, decorative work for doing ceilings, anaglypta and all this high relief on ceilings, which were there all the time of our.
Yes, we're there up
till,
to us.
Till we came out.
Selling. Yes.
And my grand, she had the chance of going on a world cruise, and this was in 1930, in the mid-30s, which was an achievement. I remember this. And she said no, she wanted to do all this high relief work in the Savoy. This was late 20s, just before I was born, I believe. And I've got photographs of my grandfather said, right, he was going to take the chance to go, and he did. He went on his own. And she stayed and did, but she had the always for the business, always looking for. So she was very ongoing for a time when you think of it. I'm not. Don't take after her quite as well as that, do I?
So, how many bedrooms did the Savoy have at that time? You said they extended it.
We put on more bathrooms. No, they extended the dining rooms. They made it. Extension from what I can gather between the smoke room and the dining room, and it was then made, and of course the electricity and water, the major things that we all take for granted for many, many years, and that was when they really got started. And then of course that was it paid, they had in those days members of family, cousins and relatives that would come over and work for them as well during the season, of course. So I mean, and labour was great difference to what it is even in our time.
Do you ever remember them talking about staff and how they got their staff, or did you know anything about that?
Not as much, no. I don't remember very much, only that I know some of the certain, and when I was a lot younger, remember ones that used to say, they'd come and see us and say, well, I used to work for your grandparents, you know. But they used to keep them for a long, I mean, they had very ones that would come back every year, which was nice, you know. So obviously they must have treated them very well.
Do you remember, did you go and visit your grandparents in the hotel as a young boy when they still had
I can
boy?
Remember only being brought in down because we had a nanny. I mean, we were kept out of it. And I can remember it was a treat once a week or maybe twice a week to go to be brought down to the hotel for dinner.
What would be your impressions of that, visiting it as a child? What would
you
marvellous. See and feel and hear?
Absolutely wonderful, because to see all of them, having the staff there and seeing the way things were going on, even as a child, you know, trying to be dragged out of the elevator. I mean, couldn't keep me off that, playing on that. But this was things, I mean, that stick in your mind. I never thought then that I would ever, obviously, never carry on with it. But having been, it was just a natural thing for me as I got older. And it was a shame to see, you know, it would have been an end of an era. Mary and I, we haven't a family, so it is an end of the Rigby family as far as we're concerned now, obviously, in this present, well, since 19, when did we come out?
1988
when we finished.
So what was, just before we move on to your parents' time at the Savoy, what sort of impressions would it leave you in terms of the look and feel of the building when your grandparents were there? What sort of colours, what sort of furniture? Do you remember anything of that, or were you a bit too young?
A bit too young. I remember remember mainly when my mother and father were, because what disrupted me out of it was about, obviously, 1939, with the all the years we were out of it during the war. So of course I was just coming to an age, I remember, obviously remember them, but not much about the actual running of it in the 30s, you know.
So coming on to the time, what year did your parents come into the hotel, and was that because your grandparents retired?
That's they were retiring. They retired in, I think, moved out 1937, 36, 37, because I know my parents just had the really 2 years before September 39. They had about two seasons in the Savoy before the we were all kicked out, you know, just for the outbreak of war, and we had to get out.
What was that time like? Can you remember when the letter came or the announcement came?
I can remember them coming to the Savoy in September, and they had police. I remember the police standing at the end of the right outside the front door of the Savoy, and there was police around the back because we weren't allowed to, we had to leave in so much. They came in. I mean, this is my parents now, saying that they all had it. I mean, everybody went through this on. They had an inventory that they'd have to, you had to leave in so many sheets, so many articles of silver, you know, things, all basic things. This was for the Navy when they came in. And I can remember, Mum, I mean, you had to take carpets up, things, drapes down, of course, and we were given two bedrooms, the top of the Savoy, to put all these things in. And the lounge was, carpets were so big, and in those days, you couldn't get anybody to help you. They had to cut these up into, they'd only been laid, 12 months or whatever it was. I can remember my mother especially in tears about this, having to cut this up because we only had 48 hours to do it. And it was a government's, you know, they took a lot of all the furniture went out into storage into the Derby Castle. Remember all this, you had to mark things, or you tried to. I mean, everybody went, it wasn't only us, mind you. Everybody, all the hoteliers and boarding house keepers that were involved, they'd all, if any, back me up on this. I mean, we were only at school then, but it was a hassle to get out, and then you had to hand the keys over. And it was handed over to the government for the Navy. I think the Navy was the first one that came into the Central Promenade block.
What sort of things can you remember your mother sort of saying and worrying about at that time?
Well, it was just that they were so concerned that things, we were given two rooms, they had to padlock these rooms, and things would, when you had chance to go in, I remember them, they were allowed to go in, the police came with them. This would hurt them more than anything, that somebody came, when you had to go into your own, because it was a home, mind you, then, even though we had to get out, it was the war effort, and you were allowed in. I remember my father saying they had to go down, they were allowed to go in every so often, and of course the locks had been tampered with on these, things had gone, you see, out of these rooms, things we packed away, never saw them again. So it was, again, this happened with different, oh, it was a real, I believe it was dreadful, and after the war it was, I believe the Derby Castle, from what I can gather, in 45, yes, they had to go down. Everybody
46.
Had it. I can't remember whether it was alphabetically done or not. Each person was left to go and claim your furniture. And of course, certain things we wrote, some people had the presence of mind to write, you know, paint the name of the place on the back of furniture. And you could see some of it going in or into other people's homes, I believe, on the promenade, which wasn't very, very nice. They eventually, I believe, it was a terrible hassle, I believe, just for everybody concerned, trying to get some things you got back, some you never got back, you know. It was a right mess, I believe, till they eventually had. They were allowed compensation, I believe, but it wasn't, obviously, from what my parents said, enough to get what stuff you wanted, quality stuff you wanted to get back. And of course, trying to get it then, after the war, everybody was in the same boat, you know, rationing and everything.
Did you ever visit the hotel as a young man when it had the Navy in? Did you sort of see it like that?
My father did, and it was absolutely appalling. I'm going to go down in history, and I've said it, and Mary will back me up with this, and the worst people that were in it, and I'm sure I'd tell anybody, after the Navy was the worst, the Royal Navy was the worst, and I've said this to people and not been very, very popular, as you well know, my love, it's true, it was utter hell, I believe, after that, after the Navy, when the Navy left it, before the internees came in. And I remember going down, there was banisters taken, there was floorboards ripped up, it was absolutely, because ours was the Camp Naffy canteen, I believe.
It was filthy, wasn't it?
And it was absolutely appalling, the filth and that was under the floorboards and things like this. And that nearly drove my parents up the wall with, again, other people. We weren't the only one, mind you. And when then the internees, I can't remember if it was the Germans or the Italians, and then they turned it into a prisoner of war camp.
Do you remember which camp it would have been? Because I know the different camps had names.
Valcari, ours was Valcari 1, I think it was Valcari 1 and 2. Mm. At the Castle Mona wasn't it, because that was an officer's, I believe the officer's mess, the Castle Mona. But the palace was the old ballroom was a gymnasium, or, you know, they use this for obviously for all the facilities. And when the internees moved out, okay, they did a lot of work, because I can remember going in when after the war, obviously. And again, it needed a lot of, there was a lot, obviously, been structural, all the fittings had gone, there was no, you know, lights, that's wires left from the ceiling and all this. And some people opened that year, and they had a bonanza. We didn't, because we said we wouldn't open, no way, until we could get it as we wanted it. So we that first summer, that first year, when they were queuing up, you could put in anybody anywhere. You know, the first post-war holiday period, and we opened the second year, whatever, it would be 1947, I beg your pardon, yes.
Was there anything the internees left behind that you saw? Because I know some of them painted and did me.
They did, actually, yes. There wasn't as much at the Savoy, but it was in Ireland, because my grandparents had bought Ballycottia up. That was their private home. And when my grandfather died, of course, my grandmother stayed on all until she died, actually, in the 50s. And they did, and I believe they're still there now. I don't know, but that's going off from the Savoy. But that's was the internees we had working for us at Ballycottia on the farm. They did these paintings on the in the dining, and they I believe they were there of because there were a lot of them from Naples, and they did the Bay of Naples and Vesuvius and all this. And I believe it, I can remember that, and that was beautiful. And we did have paintings that they did form a family, which we haven't got now of. That they actually did have some of the dogs we had and some of the animals and some of us as children. But unfortunately, we hadn't, that they were left with my father. When my father died, we haven't got those now, have we, Mary?
No.
All those went,
no.
I'm afraid, when he died. But yes, we had memories, and they were very, and they came to the Savoy after the war on holiday with their families. I remember them coming back.
With
the internees, actually,
they
came
they
back.
They would come back.
They came back to us, because they never what they were really. Some of them were fascists that were just living in England when the outbreak of war. But of course, it's Italian nationality. They loved the island. They thought it was absolutely marvellous, of course. And out on the farm, they used to take me out fishing with down to the river fishing, and down up when we were up in Ballycotti. And that was that era. That was after the. So it's been quite a hectic life when you look back on it, hasn't it?
Can you remember the first time that your parents or yourself walked back into the hotel when you got it returned by the government?
I do, yes, I do.
What was that day like?
Pretty harrowing at first, to be quite honest. I mean, more emotional more than anything, I think. It was. It's. I think when it's your own, you know, not mine then, obviously, but my parents. It was very emotional because things that you'd spent on such a lot of time on that had to be replaced and had to be just, well, vandalised up to a point. I mean, they were just, but again, we weren't the only one. Everybody, we were all in the same boat, but it was very, very emotional at the time. And I mean, it was a lot of work to get it. It took us years to get it back. I mean, it's, you know, working to as we wanted to get it back in. So it was quite in those early, but the business was excellent. I mean, you know, we had the wonderful business, and you know, we obviously you thought it was just going to go on. But
how old would you have been at the time when you got the hotel back?
I was just left 15, I think, for just 15, and I left school prematurely because I didn't want to carry on. I wanted to get back, and well, we were helping then, mum and dad, you know, to get, because we were just doing it. It was just the three of us. Then my sister was married. Married after shortly after when was Pat married? because my sister wasn't really involved with it at all. She was she got and got married when she was 21, so of course it was just left with my mum, dad and I doing the main part of it, really, you know.
Can you remember what sort of challenges there were getting open for the first time, and what they you mentioned that they didn't open for the very first post-war season. Can you tell me a bit about that decision and what they said?
Well, they said, really, from what I can remember, getting stuff, getting food, getting with the rationing, all the rationing that was going on, tea, coupons, I mean, again, everybody was in this and trying to get themselves, getting stuff that they wanted. That
well,
it was and furnishings,
carpets,
you couldn't get and carpets,
well,
you
curtains.
Know, lino, we had to put
everything.
You had to just cut strips. We had lino because you had just a runner of carpet in a room, because all of the carpets, some had been stolen. You see, some had gone, things were taken and put in storage. They gave you compensation for not enough, so it was really hell from what I can hear and remember my parents talking about. And they said, and of course you just had to get what the second year, because we did open, but it still wasn't for what they, not for the kind of standard we would want to. People were more tolerant, though, mind you, in those days.
Can you remember them saying anything about how they managed, obviously it's a sensitive subject, how did they manage financially at the time, having lost the business for the war?
Well, yes.
Then, of course, they couldn't open for that first season, so they didn't have any turnover, and obviously they had to buy a lot of new things.
Exactly, yes.
Did they have to borrow?
They did. They actually borrowed from my grandparents. Because my grandfather was died at the start of the war, and it was loans that fortunately they had enough money to help. I mean, it was paid, obviously it was a loan, but it was given to my father and to my uncle as well, I believe, from what I can gather, because you just, again, my uncle, you see, my father's brother, he served in the RAF during the war, because of being, there was about 10 years, 12 years age difference, and being younger, because he had to go to, he was called up, in other words. But my father, being over the age, he was too old to go in then, so the forces, so he literally went out. We had the farm, and we used to grow, you know, I mean, literally all the life, he adapted himself, he loved the farm life anyway, with keeping pigs and sheep and things like this, you know, and that was literally how we survived, selling these, you know, green groceries and all this during the war. You just have to do something.
Did the farm in more peaceful times help supply the needs of the hotels?
It did, yes.
Thinking back to the fact you had a group of hotels as a family, did you ever, your family, buy in bulk and save money that way, or did they all make their own arrangements?
No, they made all their own arrangements, because, I mean, Ballacotti, it sustained us during the war. Because again, what compensation, that I can't remember those figures, but I know that you did you were compensated from the government, but the same, you know, the usual thing, even in those days, it wouldn't have been enough, you know, for the family of four, I mean, as we were then, to not say to survive, but not to have a lifestyle. So of course, this is what Dad did, and he was capable of doing this. But after the war, of course, when we went back into the Savoy, we had a good connection, at least my father did, with the farmers, which helped us out considerably. Well, with the ones that he worked with during the war, and they helped. They used to supply nearly all homegrown things then from the, you know, from the island.
So that helped you
meat
a bit.
And everything.
The rationing problem, they would allow you a little bit, maybe.
They did, yes.
Extra.
And I mean, in fairness, if they were saying they were very, let me say, they were very, very helpful in more ways than one.
So what was it like that first season opening after the war? What was the atmosphere like?
Absolutely amazing, because I mean, it's to us seeing people queuing for glasses of milk. I mean, Mary appreciates this more than me, because coming over, I mean, and her family living away during the war, we never went short of milk or any basics on the island, as I'm sure you've been told before. I mean, it was far worse, obviously, from where you came from in Stoke-on-Trent and around the Midlands, because your father used to come over, didn't he, to bring things back for you. And we couldn't understand people like Felicis when they opened these kiosks on the promenade, and there were queues, there'd be queues, not just half a dozen, 30 or 40 people queuing for ice cream and just glasses of milk, because they were, you know, things like this, that just this was the initially after the war, I mean, everything was in such things that we took for granted, more or less. The basics of milk and eggs, which we weren't really, you know, basic food and bread, even though it was still, I mean, obviously so on food rationing, but we never had the problems that they had.
So is that why your parents put their greatest efforts into the kitchen to get that up and running first?
Because they did it themselves, and we had cooks that we'd had, people that we knew from before the war, they came back to us just after the war. Naturally, they wanted the, you know, so we had a standard in the kitchen that which we carried on, that everything that we went into that dining room, we had. It wasn't a thing that was one for the guests and one for the family, and it was the same with the staff. Everybody had what was cooked. That was how we ran the business, and that was how, we still say to this day, how it's, we had people coming back. And that's how you have to, we always believed in this, never mind putting on different, I mean, I know things have changed now, though then it was basically family, everything had to be done, as Mary will tell you this, with no tins of peat, no other tin stuff, everything was all fresh vegetables, yes. You know. And
so
everything.
How did they find their staff? Did they have trouble getting enough staff back? And did they open the whole hotel in one go, or did they do it in stages?
No, they used to open it usually, and they'd bring them over in May, at the end of April, beginning of May, because the seasons used to be just before the Whit, as we used to call it, Whit Week, in those days, because of the TT, you know, the practicing, starting for the racing. And you'd get them, they'd come over, because we used to do all the cleaning ourselves, everything was, we used to do all the spring cleaning and decorating and